Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, James Hams there. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube's the sponsor. Joe Brazil pushing the buttons. We're hanging out with you till noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC, and they'll take you into the weekend at 4 o'clock right here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento sports leader. We were talking about being a hater during the break, and I couldn't think of a player that I just like, that I'm a hater of. Like,
Zach Collins?
Zach Collins came up in the chat. And yeah, Zach Collins, I'm just a hater. Couldn't tell you anything. Like, Zach Collins might be good, he might not be. I don't care. I can't stand him. Dylan Brooks. I know that Dylan Brooks has like some value, but I'm out. I'm out. Dylan Brooks can go to heck.
Okay.
Directly to heck. Don't dump that. I want everybody to hear it. Yeah, just like, yeah, no, I don't like him. I don't think that's how Ham feels about Zach Levine. Your questions are about the fit.
Yeah.
Your concerns are about the fit.
Well, the concerns are clear. They're about the fit. It's about defense. It's about 43, 46, and 49 million, and it's about a history of injury. Now, if he doesn't get hurt his entire time here in Sacramento, that's great.
Definitely.
But there's no way to get around the fact of the money he makes and the fact that he plays on one side of the court.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he has moments where he has nice defensive plays, but those moments are fleeting. And if you're going to be a good defensive team, it's really because, again, Malik Monk has moments where he's good defensively. Mm-hmm. He also has plenty of moments where he's not.
Correct.
And so if that's your starting backcourt, you better have like the good McDaniel brother at the small forward and Keegan Murray at the power forward. And then you better be able to come off the bench with a shot blocker. Like, you have got to support those guys the right way. Well, and that's the problem.
And it's just, it might not even be just on-ball defense. It's how easy they are to get into a mismatch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when you're having to switch everything defensively because you're like, hey, you know what? Zach's not getting through this screen, so we gotta switch it to not give up a wide-open look. And there's just all these things that happen defensively. You're losing guys on back cuts off the ball. You're getting the Kings into rotations easily where you're generating wide open threes and going, what were the Pelicans, 21 of 50 last night from three?
Yeah, something like that.
I guess that's what happens. And that doesn't mean that every time they're going to defend somebody, that player's going to score. It just makes it really hard to play team defense.
It also doesn't mean that like everything is Zach LaVine's fault. Like you're going to put Zach LaVine on a basketball team, you need to support him the right way, just straight up. Mm-hmm. And like we watched this entire thing play out with the Bulls for the last 3 years.
Yep.
And they had Patrick Williams part of the time. They had
Ayodele Dosunmu.
And before they traded
Wendell Carter.
No, that was a long time ago.
Alex Caruso. Yeah.
At least they had like on-ball defenders to mask some of this. That's right. What you have to do. And even that didn't really, I mean, they had a couple of years ago, they're a really good defensive team, despite having some of these players on the roster. But like, you got to figure it out. And team building isn't easy. And team building at the deadline is even more difficult. But, you know, I would like to tell you Jake LaRavia can disguise a bunch of this stuff. The problem is he's playing 12 or 13 minutes a night.
Exactly.
It's really tough to have that type of impact when you're not playing major minutes. Same with Jonas Valanciunas. It's fine. He can help you with like putting a roadblock in the middle of the key.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to be able to defend a three-point shooting like stretch four, stretch five? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But there's value in what he brings. The problem is 12, 13 minutes a night. Mm-hmm. And when you have other players who are playing 34, 35, 40 minutes last night, a bunch of guys go for 40 minutes, it gets really, really tough. And if he is going to be that player, right, that just is like instant offense and all that stuff. Zach LaVine.
Uh-huh.
That's fine. But in a game where you got 32 points and 10 assists, you have got to say, give me the ball and get out of the way.
Yeah. And the players have to recognize that too.
No, they do. They do. They just like the night before, they recognized that Keon Ellis was hitting his threes.
Yep.
Kept feeding him. Then last night, you get to a point where it's like, hey, why do you go away from him for the entire final 6 minutes of the game in the overtime session?
Didn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And so that's player recognition on the court. Doug, at one point, ran out of timeouts. Mm-hmm. Both coaches ran out of timeouts late in that game. But it came to a point where it's like, okay, like, how do you fix it on the court? Mm-hmm. And right now, these players don't have, I'd say, the cachet with each other to say, hey, everyone in the circle, mm-hmm. we're not doing that anymore. Clear out. We're going to do something of, if the ball comes to you on the baseline and you can get another jump shot up, that's fine, but we're not going to go ISO on you. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to get in a pick and roll for three or four plays in a row. We're going to try to get Zach some more shots because he's mm-hmm. on fire. Like, those are things that need to happen. This team needs to have, they need to be assertive with each other, and they need to have honest conversations with each other.
Yeah. And the guys, Malik and DeMar, or sometimes it's going to be Zach LaVine, who the ball's not going to be in their hands. They have to be able to live with that.
Yeah.
They have to be able to understand that and sacrifice on certain nights. And it's tough, dude. Like, player management is really, really difficult. Like, it is part of what made Eric Spoelstra so freaking good at, and he's good at a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But when he had the Miami Heat with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, like, that's a lot of ego management. And the Warriors of the mid 2010s and late 2010s, like, that was a lot of ego management. And that's kind of what it's going to be on Doug here over the next 27 games.
Yeah. This is, like I said this a couple of days ago, this is not like the first 2 years of college, like, coaching situation. This no. isn't like getting your bachelor's degree. This is like master's PhD level stuff that Doug, who is a new coach, has to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of the changes at the deadline, replacing a really good coach, all of the changes at the deadline, including your best player going out the door, mm-hmm. but three rotational pieces and guys that defensively aren't going to mesh at all, which we already know. So, like, there's all of these things that you've got to, like, dive into and be sensitive to the fact that, hey, look, we can sit here and bag on DeMar DeRozan for missing seven shots in like, the final 4 minutes of the fourth and the overtime session. Mm-hmm. The night before, he won you the game with doing the same thing. The game before that, he scored 42 and won you the game doing the same exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be in the moment where you realize that, like, tonight might not be your night and it might be somebody else's night. And that's okay. You don't have to be the guy that carries everybody, that carries his team to victory mm-hmm. every single night. And I don't know, you know, they flash this, the stat up on the screen. DeMar DeRozan has more clutch points in the last 10 years than anybody in the NBA. I get it.
Hey, we should have talked about this yesterday. The way they presented that was so funny to me, because it was DeMar DeRozan and then LeBron James and Giannis and De'Aaron Fox and Trae Young in some order.
Mm-hmm.
And the broadcast is like, look at DeMar up there at the top of the list with LeBron and Giannis and Trae Young. So many great players. Just passed over De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, here we go.
Well, I mean,
that was funny.
That was a problem the entire first half of the season here.
Mm-hmm.
You could see the internal struggle between Fox being the guy who's typically closing mm-hmm. and DeMar DeRozan taking over the job
mm-hmm.
and, like, the battle there. Like, they didn't compliment each other either.
Nope.
It's not like this, and that's where sometimes players are difficult to compliment.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a player like DeMar, it works a lot better off the bench because, hey, look, he can do what he does and he can get up 10, 12, 15 shots a game. But he can do it with a second unit where they're going to rely on him for that scoring punch mm-hmm. as opposed to a first unit where guys are literally getting frozen out. And you're having games where your superstar center is getting six shots or he's getting 10 shots and everyone's going, why is this happening? It's like, what do you mean, why is it happening?
Yeah.
Because you got three other guys who are averaging between 15 and 20 shots a game in the starting lineup alone.
The amount of times Domas gets a switch on a smaller player, and look, I know that Domas is not like a deep offensive bag, like get him the ball and he's just going to cook. Like, that's not his game. That's not his strength. But when there's a smaller player on him in the post, he's going to score. The amount of times he gets a switch and he's just stuffed this guard into the second row and they're like, no, don't like it. Get him the ball. Anyways, I'm sorry. That was just a, that's a,
no, that it happens all the time.
It's a pet peeve. And that goes beyond DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. That goes back to last year. It's just not a thing they look at. Why?
Well, then on top of that, there's poor Keegan, who's like, just hanging out. Like, I understand where I'm at on this pecking order.
Yeah.
Is there a below bottom? Because that's, it's like, I'm down there somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, whatever's keeping this totem pole upright, like the hole you dug in cement in the ground, like I'm part of that down there.
Man.
Yeah, tough.
Salute to Jiffy Lube, who sponsors the program. James Hems there. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil behind the glass. We're the Insiders. We're live from 10 a.m. to noon every day. If you just checking in, salute. Appreciate you. We did our giveaway earlier, and apparently the word was not working, so we're going to do it again. ESPN1320.com.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the Jiffy Lube contest page. It's front and center. You can't miss it. Jiffy Lube is going to hook you up with a $50 Jiffy Lube gift certificate and an exclusive Insiders hoodie that James Hamm is currently wearing. We have them in three colors. You can only get it through this contest, or if you work here, but you can only get it through this contest. And you're going to go to ESPN1320.com to the contest page and enter the code word bummer, because that's what last night's game was, a bummer. B-U-M-M-E-R. That should be in at ESPN1320.com in the Jiffy Lube contest page now. Hell yeah.
There we go.
Are you looking forward to All-Star Weekend?
I'm looking forward to the break. No, really. I mean, like, I'm credentialed to go to All-Star Weekend. I'm not going. Because the Kings.
Cool. I'm glad I gave up my credential for you then. No, that's tight. That's tight.
I told Charlie, hey, you can give it back.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, if the Kings aren't represented, then there's not a reason for me to be there.
No, no doubt. No doubt.
And so that's one of those things where it's like, hey, look, I get it. You know, but it's crowded. It's crazy. It's going to be in a city that's totally packed with people. And everything's just extremely different. And if the Kings aren't going to be represented, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, I don't need to go down for the Scalabies here and Isaac Jones performance in like the Rising Star. Well, what, they're not even in the Rising Stars. They're in the G League next game.
Yes, but from an NBA standpoint, they were shut out of All-Star Weekend.
Okay.
Skills contest, Rising Stars, dunk contest, and All-Star game.
All of it. Yeah.
All of it. Doesn't feature the Kings. Well, I'm really looking forward to the new format.
Okay.
I think the games are going to be really fun.
I hope
because
so.
You get that Elam ending. It's going to be so much shorter. And it's just, you know that there's like a specific end goal you're going for. And I think that's going to drive up the competitiveness.
I hope so.
I'm really looking forward to it.
It's just been so bad, you know.
It's been awful.
Yeah, I mean, even like watching De'Aaron go a couple of years ago, and he was coming off like the birth of baby Rain at that mm-hmm. point, like just days before, and so he had a lot going on. But like to just watch somebody totally disengaged and...
What most of the guys in the game were.
Yeah, I totally agree. But like that's not what you want to see from like your star player. If you're going to go represent your city and your team, you want them to go out there and find success, maybe win a contest.
Yeah. Yeah, be the MVP. Go be on a national stage with all these other stars. Go make an impact. It's like, even if you're on the floor for 3 minutes, like, oh, man, look, De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, go out there and...
10 points in 3 minutes, nice.
Yeah, like, showcase what you have.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just a bummer because I get that people say, well, Domantas Sabonis, he's a lot of things, but what he isn't is, like, sexy.
Yeah, not exciting.
Yeah, he's not exciting as a basketball player. It's like... Okay, yeah, but that doesn't change the fact that he's one of the top 10 players in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So you can
and
twist
he would try in the All-Star game.
Yeah, he would. he would actually so rebound in the All-Star game.
I think the new format is going to lend itself to competitiveness, mm-hmm. which we just didn't see. It was one or two guys trying to win MVP, and it was zero amounts of defense. And I'm not like, look, I don't necessarily need it because I get it. It's a long weekend. You want some time off. And now all of a sudden you got to go play more basketball. I'm not necessarily asking it to be the early 90s All-Star games where guys are treating it like Game 7 of the Finals.
Yeah.
But can I get a little bit of competitiveness? Just a small amount. And I think this is going to drive that.
I hope so.
Especially when you get the Rising Stars All-Star team in there where it's like a bunch of young guys who are trying to prove themselves on this stage. And I think it's just I think this is a really good idea from the NBA. The other thing from All-Star Weekend, I am skipping dunk contest discourse this year.
Oh,
I'm skipping it. I don't. Maybe it's a great one because every once in a while we get a great dunk contest. My guess is it's going to suck, and we're going to get 1,000 think pieces about, is this the death of the dunk contest? What happened to the dunk contest? LeBron needs to do the dunk contest. Why doesn't Anthony Edwards do the dunk contest? And we're going to get all these think pieces again, and it's not going to fix anything.
Nope.
At some point, there will be a really good dunk contest, and people go, the dunk contest is back! Like, no, it's not.
I'm here for the three-point shootout. They've got some shooters in that one.
That's a fun one.
Yeah.
But I'm skipping the dunk contest discourse. If it's good, cool. If it's not, whatever. I won't be participating.
Okay.
That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube's the sponsor. We're the insiders. Let's take a look back at the first half for the Sacramento Kings. The first half-ish. The first portion of the season. The pre-All-Star break portion of the season. What's gone wrong? What's gone well? Question mark? We'll do all that next. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader.
My God.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Hey, show off those flowers that Strelitzia just dropped off for us. Yo!
Seriously.
That's insane.
Absolutely incredible.
Those are amazing.
Big shout out to our friends at Strelitzia.
I hope my wife isn't watching. If she is, hello, honey. I'm about to ruin my surprise. I'm dropping those off at her work, and she has no idea.
Oh, sweet.
I emailed her boss. Well, I know one of her coworkers, so I had to reach out to the coworker and said, hey, what's your boss's email? Had to email the boss and be like, hey, I'm planning on doing this. Is that okay? And when can I do it where it's not a massive disruption? And I got my answers, and we're good to go. So yeah. Fingers crossed this isn't the one time ever she's tuned in.
Hopefully not. Yeah, absolutely incredible.
Yeah. I don't know what I was expecting.
Those are literally the biggest roses I've ever seen in my life.
They look fake.
They're like the size of a baseball.
That's what I was expecting. Like, you know, the roses you buy like at the grocery store, but like done up really nice.
See, this is why you don't go to the grocery store for roses. You spend a little bit extra and you get something amazing like this. This is like, they're like tree limbs. This is incredible.
They're the type of roses that will just be, hey, you remember those roses you got me that year for Valentine's Day? And they're not just available for Valentine's Day. Strelitzia, get your significant other flowers anytime.
That's right. And Mother's Day's coming up.
And ladies, if you're listening, guys like flowers too.
Yeah. Wow.
It doesn't have to be a one-way street, you know?
Yeah. Pretty cool, eh?
You know what's not been pretty cool?
Uh-oh.
The Kings first half.
Good segue.
Thanks. What a ridiculous 5 months, bro. I was so, and I've done this rant before, I'm going to do it again. When I got this job, I'd been laid off for like 6 months, and I got this job here in Sacramento, and if you know me, you know how much I love this city, and how I, 98% of my work in media has been in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this market, and I love the fans and all that. When I got my job up here, I was so stoked, but then so many people were like, oh man, gonna have to cover the Kings, huh? It's like, they were coming off Beam Team 1. I was like, yeah, no, I get to cover the Kings. Like, they are ascending. I am really high on where this team's at. And then last year didn't go great. It's like, all right, but hey, you know what? Needed to make a couple of tweaks. You get DeMar DeRozan. Okay, this year it's going to be better. I said 51 wins all offseason, and even through the first part of the season, they struggled a little bit, and it was like, okay, 51 wins, I'm sticking with it. And now we're just back here. And that's what we fired a coach. We've had to trade a franchise point guard. in just kind of a messy way.
Yeah.
You got...
The honeymoon phase is over, huh?
It's over.
Oh, man.
This actually, it feels even worse than like the ending of the honeymoon phase. It feels like the divorce phase.
Oh.
Like the dissolution afterwards. Like, that's what it feels like. And it's really a bummer because, like, I don't know how else to... Like, I've covered this team for so long, and you're hoping for to see the rise, right? And the 6 to 8 year window of really, really good, like, playoff basketball.
Yeah. But this is where it looked like they were headed.
But you just, like, you got to a point, and all of a sudden there's, like, the giant spinning wheel on your computer screen. Like, mm-hmm. They just got to a point where they just got stuck, and they didn't do the necessary things. And then by the time they did do the necessary things, it was like... Oh no! Like that's out of desperation.
They just started Kangzing all over the place.
Yeah, just like really, really frustrating. I hate seeing again coaches get fired in the middle of the season. It doesn't usually work out. And then I absolutely hate seeing you get to a point with your superstar player where he's got to go. And like this is the second time I've seen it. Like DeMarcus Cousins, same exact situation. Except for DeMarcus was the flip side of it. He's the one that. Like really, just couldn't figure out how to be an employee, how to be a good employee, and how to like find success.
This is tough because I know the De'Aaron stuff. There's so many layers to it, so understand that I know there's layers to it. But try and follow me here.
Mm-hmm.
When the Kings traded DeMarcus, it was like okay, like that was if you kind of knew what was going on behind the scenes, it's like okay, that kind of makes sense. Like I get why they felt they had to do that. With De'Aaron, it was not necessarily like that. And I know it like I said, it reached that point a little bit, but on the surface, when all this first came down, it was like, wait, no, why? What? And again, now we know that he was out when Mike Brown got fired and...
The complexities of it are just like, again, we could sit here and I could write a couple of chapters of a book on the complexities of this specific situation. It's wild. The backstory is wild and outlandish and just like, it's not over. And we'll see more down the road. I don't think it's over at all. And I also don't think the ripple effect from it is over. Like, this is exactly what we said at the beginning of the season. You don't win, a coach gets fired, a star player asks out, front office gets fired, you start fresh next year. We're just careening towards that right now. It's just like right there, like I don't know if there's a way to pull the brakes and get you off that track. And maybe they find a way. Maybe, you know, again, like I think Doug has done a really good job of keeping this thing at least on somewhat of a path.
Yeah, they haven't lost 10 in a row. And just fallen out completely.
No, and they won 7 in a row.
Yeah.
And they got back over 500 after falling 6 games under. Mm-hmm. You know, so those are all good things. You know, he's 7 games over 500 as a head coach. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. And you hope that translates to him getting a job, like moving forward here.
Sure.
Right? But like he still needs the pieces that we keep talking about. He still needs those things. And, you know, I get it. Like you added some pieces and it like it looks okay. It looks better than it did a week ago or 2 weeks ago, right? You've started to piece some of the depth around, but where was that 6 months ago? Where was that 2 months ago? Like, why did we have to get to this point where we were all the way down this path? And it's tough, but, you know, this is where they are.
We're at a point now that I don't think you referred to them as traumas, so I'm just going to use that word. The traumas are over. You've got an off season to navigate now.
Oh yeah.
And the off season will be, and I hesitate to look forward right now, but I think the off season is going to obviously be dictated by how the season ends. If the Kings find their way into the playoffs and they win around in the playoffs, everything kind of looks a little bit different, right? But if they continue on this path and they miss the postseason, whether it's via the play in or whatever, and they just don't make the playoffs, they're not one of the final 8 teams in the West. You're probably looking at a new front office. Mm-hmm. You might be looking at a new front office anyway. I don't think the moves that they made at the deadline were enough to be like, oh, hey, yeah, they got to go in the right direction. I think it's just, they just made some moves. And then number two, we don't know what the fallout, like we've seen kind of the immediate fallout. I think part of it is why they've struggled lately is just like, this has just been a lot, but there might be additional fallout this off season where you've got players like, hey man, this sucks. We already saw DeMar DeRozan talk about this publicly with Lou Williams.
Yeah.
Said, hey, part of the reason I came here was De'Aaron, so if he's gone, I got some stuff to think about.
Mm-hmm. He's not the only one. Like, Domantas Sabonis might be in this same exact boat where he's saying, hey, what exactly are we doing here? Because I signed up to play with this group of players, and we can say, oh, well, him and De'Aaron, whatever, they unfollowed each other, all that stuff. No, they put these guys in a situation where it became contentious behind the scenes, where, you know, where people chose sides. And I think more than anything else, that's what we're going to see how this thing plays out. But where people chose specific sides, and there are winners and losers in the deal.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, you know who's the real loser? Sacramento Kings fans.
That's it.
That's it. Because you had something, you were on the rise, and now you don't. And you're hoping that they can somehow claw together and keep this thing together. But now you're hoping and dreaming of that with a 35-year-old and a 30-year-old with long history of injury and like all of these pieces that don't fit together. You're like trying to figure it out, but you're really locked in to this roster too. Like you might be able to trade DeMar DeRozan this summer. You hope you don't have to trade Domantas Sabonis this summer, but you also, there's no going back on Zach LaVine. Nobody else is taking the $46 and $49 million the next 2 years. You know, like you can make changes, but those changes are going to hurt. And not only that, but you got to figure out a way to still to grow this team the right way, to put the pieces in place to make this team better. Or you don't. You admit defeat and you go backwards and you try to scrap it all and start over. And you might be forced into that just because.
Yeah, that's it.
So tough decisions, man. Yeah, it's like a team on the brink again. Like you're on the precipice of disaster again, and I don't want to, like, we're talking about the first half of the season. It's not just about last night's game. It's not. Because again, this is like whatever we're talking about right now is band-aid solutions. Whatever happened at the trade deadline is band-aid solutions and knee-jerk reactions. Like, how do you move forward from this? And that's going to be the challenge that's ahead. And, you know, again, like, it's messy. Like, this story is so messy behind the scenes. Like, I don't know how everybody survives any of it. Like, it's really, really a complicated and ugly story.
That's James. I'm Kyle.
We're the downers.
We're the very serious bummers today. But in all seriousness, my next question was going to be, okay, there's all that. Do you see any silver linings? Like, and let me, I want to be very clear on this because I don't want it to sound like we're trying to spin this as actually everything's great. It's not. Everything's bad and it's probably going to get worse. Probably.
Yeah.
Is there a world where they go, I don't know, where they got 27 left, 18-9 in their final 27 and make it? Sure, man. Like, if that's what you, where you want to live, cool. I'm not going to live there. I don't think James is going to live there, but okay. Silver linings, like just little things, like I want to try and be a little positive. And again, these are not things that necessarily mean everything's going to be awesome. But has there been player performances, roster moves, anything like that that jumps out to you as like, hey, that's actually been a thumbs up?
Are there? Yeah, I think Keon Ellis has just established himself as a player that you need to figure out how to keep him long term.
That was when I wrote this down. That was the one thing that jumped out to me.
Yeah, I think he's just been absolutely wonderful as a person to have on your team, as a representative. I also think, you know, for whatever, like the bumps, the ups and downs that we've seen, I think Malik Monk is a starting NBA point guard, and I think he's a very good one. And I think that but you have to support him in the right way. You need shooters, you need defensive players around him. I think that that's one of those things where I do believe that he can play NBA point guard for 30 plus minutes a night. I'd like to see a lot more pick and rolls. I'd like to see you get back to like who you were before. They've had to scrap a lot of things because that's not what DeMar and what LaVine do. And so you're trying to, like what Mark said yesterday, they're putting all of these bull sets into their offensive system. But I do think that Malik Monk averaging, you know, close to 20 points and like 6.5, 7 assists a game as a starter, like that's really good. And I think there is potential for him to be that type of player night in and night out. Will he have like just a straight climb to the top? No, but you certainly understand this offseason what he needs to work on. He needs to work on getting stronger. He needs to work on the endurance factor, being able to be a great three-point shooter for, you know, 6 months, not for a month here, a month there, and then having off months in between. But overall, I think that that's a good plus. I think that Jake LaRavia has been like a really nice find. And I think that they can keep him around. I'm not in the panic mode that everybody else is.
Not going to be a $10 million a year guy.
No, I don't think he's a $7 million.
Can we stick on the Malik thing real quick?
Yeah.
Before we move on. First of all, you talked about the three-point shooting. His three-point percentage has gone down every year for the last 5 years. 40.1 to 39.1 to 35.9 to 35 to 32.5. I don't love that. I don't love the more than 2 turnovers a game. I disagree that he's a starting point guard in the NBA.
Yeah, you can disagree with
me. I think the best version of Malik Monk is a six man. I think that him being a starter, you mentioned Band-Aid solutions. That's what this was. That was Mike Brown firing the last arrow in his quiver, like, hey, let's try this, because he resisted it for so long. Because, hey, you know what? If the Kings are good, it means they have a better starting point guard than Malik Monk. And Malik's coming off the bench, and he's being electric there, and he's being super vital to what they're doing. That, I think, is the best version of the Kings, where Malik Monk is on the roster, is one where they have a good enough starting point guard that Malik can either slide to the two or come off the bench.
I don't like fully disagree with that. Like, I do think his best role is coming off the bench in 26 minutes a night, 26 to 30 minutes a night, and like changing the whole, like,
and he can spot everything. Start when he needs to.
Yeah, but I'll just like be straight up honest right now. He's a better point guard than Keon Ellis. He's a better point guard than Zach LaVine.
He's their this Kings team, he's their best option without question.
He is easily their best option. Yeah. And there is the fact that he does have chemistry with Domas, but you have to put him, again, I always go back to the Kawhi Leonard thing, put him in the position to succeed.
Then maybe that's something that if they're going to move forward with Malik Monk as the starting point guard, then maybe that's something that you need a new front office, a new head coach, or maybe it's Doug who will do this, but you need a front office who's going to go, okay, we're committing to this pick and roll, and we're just going to have awesome defenders and three-point shooters surrounding them, and that's going to be it. And then you need a head coach who's going to look at it and go, all right, Malik Monk and Domas, pick and roll. We're going to spam it every game.
At this point, I'm watching. They've shifted Malik to the left side, where he can't even really get in the pick and roll action, because it's almost like that's where LaVine feels more comfortable. Like, you see DeMar likes to be on the left block. It feels like LaVine likes to be opposite of DeMar. And so they've done that. And so now Malik can't even really get in a true pick and roll, because for him to go in the pick and roll action, he's starting way over on the left and having to go through where LaVine's man is. And so you're like, what is happening? Like, why are you taking away, like, Doug likes to talk about superpowers of players. Malik's superpower is as the best pick and roll guard in the game. He is. Like, that's statistically speaking, that's why they went out and got him, outside of him loving De'Aaron Fox. They saw what he was like in the pick and roll, and they're like, okay.
Really, like, quick first step, good distributor. Smart with it.
Incredible passer in the pick and roll. Like, he sets up Domas perfectly. And if they had a lob threat, he'd set up that guy too. So, like, why are we getting away from player superpowers? And I'm not sure.
I have no idea. This goes back to the conversation we were having earlier with the team building. I would love to know, like, why did you think these pieces were going to work? What's the theory here? What's the method here that this was all going to work? Because to your point, if you're going to commit to Malik Monk being your starting point guard, if you're going, okay, that's what we're going to do moving forward, Zach LaVine is not it. unless you're going to plant Zach LaVine in the corner and you're like, hey, Zach LaVine, you're a spot-up shooter now, which you're not.
Yep.
But give me two additional Keegan Murrays. Great. Cool. They're going to hang out and they're going to shoot threes and they're going to play good defense. But that's not what this roster is. So I don't.
I think you've got one of them. If you can find a way to start Keegan and Keon together,
yeah, good point.
You can disguise a lot of things. And I'm okay. Again, DeMar DeRozan's 6'6". Same with Zach LaVine. Zach LaVine can play the three. Mm-hmm. If DeMar can play the three, Zach can play the three. No doubt. So if you're going to go ahead and do that, you still need to find a shot blocker. You need to find other pieces that complement those players. But I'm okay with like a three guard set, basically, as long as you figure out how to add more pieces along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just
don't trust this front office to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that's how they want to go about building a team just organizationally.
No. Tough.
Really tough. Shout out to Keon Ellis, though. Salute. Having a heck of a year.
Yeah.
He really is. He really, really is. He's developing very nicely. If you can find a couple more Keons, maybe Isaac Jones is a player. Maybe Jake LaRavia is a player.
Find a way to extend Keon as quickly as possible.
Yeah. All right. Joe Brazil's behind the glass. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube sponsors this show. The handoff with one of Damian or Kenny coming up. I don't know if Kenny's here yet. I saw Damian. I don't know. Somebody from D'Lo and KC is going to join us next on The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento Sports Leader. Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, the Insiders. Joe Brazil on the ones and twos. Appreciate you hanging out, Joe. The handoff's supposed to start here shortly. We don't have anybody here yet. That's fine. A couple of the silver linings we were talking about with the Kings that we didn't get to dive into because I wanted to stop on the Malik Monk thing. The Jake LaRavia addition, I think, has potential. But again, I think that is the type of player where if he's your eighth or ninth player, you're in a very good spot. It can't be. Jake LaRavia is going to be the sixth man now.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not, that's not, I think, where he's at as a player. And maybe someday he develops into that, and maybe someday he becomes that. But that's been one of the silver linings for me has been that addition. You started to say that and I cut you off.
Yeah, I think it's been a really solid addition. And I don't know what it's going to mean going forward. I mean, look, Trey Lyles is in the last year of his contract. Jake LaRavia is in the last year of his contract. Like you're walking into this offseason with, you know, a couple of your rotational pieces as like major question marks. I think LaRavia is a player that I would invest in, but it's whether or not you can get him to stick around for like less than $5.1 million. I don't think that that's going to be a big issue. Like, I think Jake LaRavia, to me, I know some people are like, you know, the 3-year 24, the 3-year 21, or even 3-year 18. The Kings can come pretty close to that, the 3-year 18, mm-hmm. because of it starts at $5.1 million but goes up 8% a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see him as that type of player, to be honest with you, especially in Sacramento, where he's very limited as far as like how many minutes he's going to play here down the stretch. So a 2-year 10 is probably what he's going to get, maybe a 2-year 8 million-dollar deal. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Like, it is what it is. But
we like to lie to the people.
I don't think that value's out there. And it's the same thing with Harry Giles. Like, people were so upset and like, oh, Harry's going to get, you know, $7 million a year. And, like, Harry Giles never got a guaranteed contract ever again.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not. I mean, I remember years ago with Ike Diagu. You remember the Ike Diagu era?
Be like Ike? Well, that was Arizona State. But
yeah.
It was like, I like Ike or something.
Yeah,
like
he finished the season with two 30-point games. And everyone was like, oh, my gosh, you got to lock him up, you know, a 4-year whatever, and like I don't think Ike Diagu ever got another NBA contract ever again.
We got to do this the right way. Hang on.
It's time now for the handoff. Taking the handoff from James and Kyle today, here's KC, Kenny Caraway.
Yeah, that's him.
Okay, I was just making sure. I don't know what's going on with them them drops, man. I don't know, man. So I just had to check.
They're good stuff.
No, they're all the same now. It's just taking the handoff. Which they still tried to flag in the chat.
Well, I mean,
that's a play on.
I mean, it is a hey, hey. No. I don't know if they're going to call it, but it is a hey.
Yeah.
It's a, oh, goddamn.
You know what I couldn't stop thinking about last night? Watching the Kings lose in overtime to the 12-win Pelicans. Now 13-win Pelicans.
Mm, mm,
mm. Wait, why aren't my buttons working? Oh, because I'm on the wrong side. Hang on. When Joe is here, our setup is a little different, and I have to click the buttons at a different place.
Oh, my gosh. They're so unserious. Kangs.
I kept saying that just out loud to myself. Watching the game by myself, and I kept saying that last night.
I don't even know where that clip came from.
It was you saying, because the Kings had lost a game earlier in the year, and it was just like they just lost. It wasn't.
Yeah.
And you were saying, like, I'm not going to come on here and be like, they're so unserious, Kangs.
The origins of that, I remember I say that office, but the origins was like, I think it was like 2 years ago. Maybe not 2 years, maybe just a year ago, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Because unserious was like real hot.
Oh yeah, that was. I still say that sometimes.
Oh my gosh, they're so unserious.
That was a tough loss, man.
That was a tough loss. That was tough, man. I know. There's a lot of people that want to point fingers and blame and stuff like that, and they lost. Like I'm bottom line when they win. I'm bottom line when they lose. Like when you don't win, everything's fair game. Like people can say whatever the reason was. But man, I ain't gonna say I feel sorry for him or nothing like that, but man, they was trying to get out of there with a win, and they just couldn't do it. They couldn't make enough shots. They couldn't get enough stops, and they couldn't. I know, maybe a week ago when all this started, like the final four games, so I was like, man, if they can go 3-1, because rarely do I ask for like just a clean sweep of
yeah. That's,
you know,
fair.
What I mean, so I'm like, man, if they go 3-1, I think that'd be pretty good.
And that's the two Pelicans games, Warriors, Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, no, it was three Pelicans games. It was the home,
three Mavericks, Pelicans game, and
two Pelicans.
And,
the Mavs. Dallas.
Yeah.
Oh, got you.
So
okay.
I was like, man, 3-1 in that situation. When you got in a situation where you could go 4-0, it does 3-1 don't feel the same way. Like it does sting that you didn't get the 4-0, especially with the record that the Pelicans have, man. So
yeah,
that was tough last night.
When you got to 3-0, you had to get to 4-0. I mean, I think,
yep.
But I also understand what you're saying. It's really hard to be hypercritical of, let's just like DeMar DeRozan, who like misses his final seven shots last night, right? It's so hard to be hypercritical because he carried you to a victory the night before, and 2 days earlier, he carried you to a victory against Dallas with the 42 points, and he was so incredibly good. But there is no way to move the train a different direction once you go that way with DeMar. And it's like, I would have loved to have seen the Kings figure out a way to actually have a conversation on the court and say, hey, look, it's not your night. We need somebody else to step up, and Malik is stepping up, and Zach LaVine's stepping up, and Keegan's actually hit his shots, and Domas just got in pick and roll, you know, coverage like five times in a row and scored a bunch of points. Can we just try to go a different direction for a couple of plays and see how it works? If the ball finds you and you hit a jumper, that's great, or if you miss a jumper, that's fine. But for DeMar just to take it on himself and to realistically, like, call for the ball and get in the way, even in one of the late plays with Zach LaVine.
See, that was LaVine's fault. I watched that play. That's LaVine's fault. That's the play that they call all the time, the cross screen on the baseline. You see as they're going up the court, Keon is telling Malik, yeah, you go set the screen. Malik is down there setting the cross screen for Debo. And Zach LaVine, now whether it's practice time, whether it's knowing what's going on, he goes rogue and attacks the basket in that situation. And he runs into DeRozan in that situation. Now, there's a lot of things that go into that situation. Maybe Malik should have been bringing the ball up. Maybe he should have, because he knows, hey, this is what we're doing. I got the cross screen. I'm going to hit him or whatever. Maybe Zach doesn't know. Maybe Zach thinks he has autonomy to just kind of go. Maybe DeMar should have seen it and just stopped. But the play, if the way I see it and the way I've seen this team play for months now, that play was supposed to go to DeMar DeRozan, and Zach LaVine just kind of saw an angle and went. So,
but we've seen that play. We saw that play like seven consecutive plays, and it did not work at all. It didn't work, and they kept doing it. And it almost felt like, again, the way that Doug and the way that Mike have described this offense, that players are able to go do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that looked to me like DeMar, yeah, he was going to go run the play again. And it's like, no, Zach's like, no, 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 we're not running the play. And DeMar didn't stop, didn't give, you know, a guy who's got 32 points and 11 assists or 10 assists, whatever it was, he didn't give him an opportunity to, like, he didn't step back and say, okay, go ahead and take the play. Instead, he ran his man right into the play. And it was like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, but that's
Zach turned the ball over.
That's Zach LaVine's fault. In my opinion, that's Zach LaVine's fault. Like, regardless of who called the play or what should have happened, like, the play was being ran, and he ran right into DeMar DeRozan's DeRozan, Monk, and all those guys.
Whoever's fault that was, to me, though, matters less than you predicted a blowout, according to the chatty house.
I did.
James and I did the same. James and I did the exact same.
We thought it'd be a
20-point
win. What did
I say, 128-101, I think, was, like, I was fully on board with the Kings gonna boat race these dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have them come out that way, the takeaway for me is, oh, they're a little bit better than the Pelicans. Like, that's where this team is at right now. Mm. They're about a 500 team. And I think we keep waiting. It's like we heard about this pitcher. Yeah, this guy throws 108 miles an hour, and he's throwing 96. We're just kind of like, okay, wait, no, this is going to be the one. It's like, oh, nope, 96 on the gun again. Like, oh, maybe this is just kind of their fastball. Maybe they're about a 500 team.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
And the fact that they don't have that switch to flip where, yep, they're just going to go dominate a Pelicans team that's not playing Zion, like, that's a bummer to me.
It was a disappointing loss last night, for sure.
You know what's not going to be disappointing is the celebrity game tonight, because Underdog has celebrity game picks.
They did their thing.
I've got a lineup on Underdog using the celebrity basketball game tonight that Mark Jones is calling.
And your insider knowledge from actually having Mark Jones on the show yesterday.
So you already know. Here's what I'm rocking with tonight on the Underdog Daily Fantasy app. Their pick 'em game is super easy. Pick two or more players, higher or lower on stats, points, rebounds, assists, etc. You know how stats go. Here's my lineup for tonight in the celebrity all-star game. Alicia Gray, WNBA player. I'm going lower than 12.5 points because when you're as good as she is, when you're that much better than everybody, you're not going to go out and try and cook and score 20.
Right.
She's going to distribute. She's going to try and let the celebrities have the fun. That's how I think that's going to go. I'm going lower than 12.5 points.
I see that.
Matt Barnes, same deal. Lower than 13.5. I don't think Matt Barnes is going to go out there and try and score a bunch of points and steal the show. He's going to let the celebrities do that.
I got you.
He's going to rebound, going to distribute. He'll score here and there.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to go crazy. Terrell Owens, though, 51 years old. You know Terrell Owens is going to try and cook. I've got him higher than 8.5 points. And then Drewski, I'm certain Drewski can't even dribble a basketball. I'm going lower than 4.5 points for Drewski.
Oh, well, maybe so. I saw him drain a three yesterday on Instagram.
Uh-oh.
You need to share those things with Kyle.
I think Drewski's going to spend more time trying to be funny than scoring points. So I'm going lower than 4.5 for Drewski. Can't wait. Join me on the Underdog app today and sign up using the promo code KYLEM to unlock a special offer up to $1,000 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit. Join in on the fun when you sign up with promo code KYLEM. Claim your special offer today and get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly upon first deposit. Must be 18 plus and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Void in Colorado. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. In New York, call the 24-7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. D'Lo and Casey coming up next. For James Hamm and Joe Brazil, I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube is the sponsor of the Insiders. We're back on Tuesday. Tuesday, no show Monday. We're back Tuesday at 10 a.m. on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Until then, drink water and be nice to people. Boom!